Welcome back to the Pac-12 Checkdown. We've got a great show for you today. On this episode, we recap the Pac-12 championship game, give out our big boy pants and little dumper awards. We then break down the all-conference awards given out just a couple days ago, as well as go through the teams that made bowl games and talk about the CFP. Finally, we reveal some breaking news revolving around USC, Urban Meyer's retirement, and the Heisman candidates being announced. And of course, the Blitz package heats up as Kyle and I debate hardcore about things that don't matter at all. But before we do that, here's your jam of the week. Staying on the Christmas theme, here's Redneck 12 Days of Christmas by Jeff Foxworthy. Kyle, the 12 days of Redneck Christmas.
I would take some of those things on that list. If they gave them to me for free, I would take them.
A foxhound dog, wasn't that one of them? Parts to a GT?
Yeah, dogs are awesome, mm-hmm. And mud tires are really expensive.
They are. Yeah, you would know that.
I would know that.
Don't you have mud tires?
I have all terrains on my car, which are, 30% more per tire than regular tires.
Yeah, you're all inclusive.
Yeah, do I take them on all terrains?
Yeah.
If you consider Alton and the freeways all terrains, then yes. But they look great.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they look mean.
That's the idea.
That's the idea. Okay. Anyways, you know what was not mean? Any offense in the Pac-12 championship game.
Oh my gosh.
Not mean at all. Final score, 10-3, Washington Huskies pull out the win. And I'm not sure if this has ever been done in a championship game, conference championship game, but no offensive touchdowns were scored. So two field goals, and the only touchdown was a pick six by Byron Murphy from the Huskies.
I feel like it just summarized the Pac-12 season very well.
Absolutely.
It also summarized Washington very well,
yes,
in my opinion, which is, a victory. It's a win. It goes in there. They're going to the Rose Bowl, which we'll talk about later, and all this is great, but meh.
Yeah, it was the meh-est of meh-bowls we could have asked for.
If we were betting on meh, we would have hit it.
We would have hit it right on the head.
Whatever the money is, whatever the return is on that, we hit it.
Yeah. And this is, there was 494 yards of total offense.
That's like a first half for Oklahoma.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield was passing for almost as much as that by himself in each game this year.
Gosh.
So it was not pretty by any means, but Washington did pull it out. Congrats to the Huskies. They are the Pac-12 champions. I don't really have a whole lot to say, to be honest, about it. I mean, it was not a lot of interesting things happened until the pick six by Byron Murphy taking it back to the house.
Yeah, I mean, I think the better team won.
Yeah.
The team that we expected won. It was a little more of a dogfight than I expected. The issue was, we talked about this last week, right? You have a Washington team that's just, they are what they are, and then you have a backup quarterback in Utah. You have the two best defenses in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. On top of that, and then I got, a couple minutes before halftime, I was watching the game, and I was sitting there thinking, I should have expected this. Like, why didn't I expect this to be so low scoring? These are two amazing defenses. They should be.
Yeah.
They should be duking it out. There should be a lot of punts, a lot of three and outs, which there were, and,
That's what we got.
Yeah, it is what it is.
I guess we just wanted a little bit more scoring, right? Because Utah had scored over 40 points in like four of the last five games. It wasn't like they were completely being held with a backup quarterback and backup running back. They were still putting up points, but that's not what we got at all. And I'm sure that we're going to have very similar big boy pants and little dumper awards, considering there was only a few people that actually played pretty decent. So I'll let you start. Who did you give your big boy pants awards for the Pac-12 championship game?
Well, I went outside of the Pac-12 championship game for my, because I don't care to give anybody any awards in that game.
Fair.
So I am actually going to completely switch gears, and I'm going to switch over and talk about the SEC championship game, which was incredible.
Oh, that was insane. Yeah.
And I just can't not, and I don't know where it would fall on this agenda today, but I can't not talk about Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
What he has gone through after last year and getting pulled at halftime in the national championship game to see Tua come in and get all the attention. He gets benched. He is the backup all season long. He sits there and he waits for his time to shine, prepares like he has been preparing the whole time, doesn't transfer, which a lot of people thought he was going to do.
Yeah.
He comes in after Tua gets hurt and just lights it up, brings Alabama back, and they win that game. And I don't know, like the connection that Tua and Jalen have for a backup and a starting quarterback, considering they've both been in each role.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. And I don't know what the future looks like for him, but I just feel like he deserves some props. And after watching that Pac-12 championship game, I didn't want to put any props there, so I put them elsewhere.
It's a fair point. So yes, on this Pac-12 podcast, we are going to talk about the SEC championship game. Alabama won 35-28. But like you said, after Tua got hurt, Hurts went in, went 7-for-9 for 82 yards and a touchdown passing, and also rushed for 28 yards and another touchdown passing, 14 points in the fourth quarter, all because of him, to help the Alabama Crimson Tide win the SEC championship, which in my opinion is much better, because if Georgia would have won, we would have had two teams in the college football playoff, and I think everybody would have been very upset to have that happen again.
Yeah, listen, Tony, I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about the SEC on the Pac-12 podcast. My hand has been forced.
Yes.
I have no choice. That game was incredible. Watching that game, I had half a mind to sit there and think that those are the two best teams in the country.
Yeah. I tend to agree.
I mean,
well, I don't know.
Georgia looked good.
Georgia did look good, but I think Clemson is very good. And when you have the defensive line that Clemson, we're really just jumping the agenda right now, but that's fine. We'll get back on track at some point. But Clemson has the best defensive line in the country. And when you have three of the four guys going to be drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, your linebackers can fly around, your secondary can play man. You have a lot of freedom on the defensive side of the ball to do a lot, and their offense is equally as explosive. So I think Clemson is very good too. I think we're going to get another Clemson-Alabama matchup, which at this point it's like, might as well just keep going, right? Kind of like Cleveland and Golden State.
Stupid. I'm going to save my Clemson comments for later in the show.
Yeah, let's get back on track. Because my contract dictates that I talk about the Pac-12, I will give my big boy pants awards to someone from the Pac-12 championship game. And I think there's only one person you can actually give it to, and that is Byron Murphy, who had two interceptions, one he took back for a touchdown, the game-winning touchdown. He also had one tackle.
Wow.
That's where my big boy pants awards ends. Let's jump over to the little Dumper awards. Little Dumper, I hate to do this, and I mentioned it last podcast because I knew at some point a backup is a backup for a reason. And my little Dumper award goes to Shelley, the backup quarterback for the Utah Utes. Unfortunately for him, he didn't play well. He threw three interceptions, 17 of 27 for 137 yards. He had a QBR of 9.3. 9.3.
Hold on. Excuse me?
Yeah, 9.3. The decimal is in the right place. It's not 93. It's 9.3.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel bad, because like I said, he's a freshman, Jason Shelley, freshman, you know, had to try and take over for Tyler Huntley, who was having a great year, and you're thrust in that spotlight, and he had a couple good games, but then you come up against, in the biggest game of the year, against the best defense in the conference, and that's what happens to you. So my little Dumper award goes to Jason Shelley.
Did he look like a deer in the headlights or what in that final 2-minute drive?
Oh, I know. I felt so bad for him.
He was standing there looking at the defense and looking at his coach like, I have no idea what I'm going to do right now. Like, you could see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
Through a helmet, through a face mask.
You know what? But that's a combination of the moment maybe being a little bit too big for him and Washington making him feel super uncomfortable, right? Like, we had talked about last week how they're not necessarily getting after the quarterback all the time, because that's not what Washington does. They only had one QB hurry and I think two sacks. But when you're that good on defense, especially in the secondary, where you have linebackers running deep into secondary to cover a deep third, or they're running underneath going man, and then you have the best corners in the conference matched up against your wide receivers who are hit or miss week in and week out. I would be nervous too. I'd be deer in the headlights for sure.
Yeah, it was just extremely obvious.
Yeah,
his position.
So do you have a different little dumper award? Are you going back to the SEC championship game?
No, I'm not, because everybody there played relatively well. Very similar to yours in that my little dumper award, if I could get the noise, please. Do you do it after or before?
Little dumper. We could do it before.
My little dumper award goes to the Pac-12 championship game. Because the quarterbacks threw zero touchdowns and four interceptions.
Oh man.
The best rusher had 70 yards, and then the best receiver had 68 yards. So it was a devastatingly boring, crappy, sloppy football game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I have. I just feel like both of us are so speechless for the first 15 minutes of this podcast trying to talk about this. Like, I'm forcing everything out of myself to try to pull up stuff that we could discuss, but there's nothing to talk about here, Tony.
No,
that's it.
I agree. I totally agree. I think we were expecting it to be not the best of games because of how good the defenses were, but I don't think we were expecting it to be this. And unfortunately, they actually had a good time slot. It was at like 5:30 on Friday night. So like, it was one of the only games on that had any relevance to anything. And this is what we put on. And it's really making it hard for us to generate any content, which is unfortunate because it was a championship game.
And if you look at in comparison to what we saw on Saturday, which was the Oklahoma-Texas game was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great game. That was back and forth the whole time until Oklahoma kind of, picked it up at the beginning of fourth quarter and kind of ran away with that game. But it was just electrifying. Kyler Murray is like, he floats out there.
Right. Oh, he looks good.
And the SEC championship game, like we talked about, was just unbelievable. Like, I was glued to my seat. At that point, there was so much implication on the Ohio State game. So I was watching that too. Like, the from noon on, well, probably like 10:30 on Saturday was just such awesome football.
Oh yeah.
That and you look back and you think about what you watched on Friday night and you're like, oh man, that was just, it did not live up to, the billing compared to the rest of the conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. It did not give the Pac-12 as a conference overall a good look, but Championship Saturday in general did not disappoint, because even those two good games that you talked about, Big 12 and SEC championships, then I think we got exactly what we expected from Clemson and Ohio State in their conference championship games, which is by pummeling the other schools. Clemson destroyed Pitt, and Ohio State and Northwestern battled for a little bit, but then Ohio State kind of ran away with it in the fourth quarter and then went in 45-24. So I think from everybody else, people got kind of what they were hoping for and expecting. And Pac-12, we did not show out.
Yeah, now that we're on that subject, right? Let's talk about Clemson, because people have been high on them all year. And there's a couple things I think about this. One, I think about the current season, who they've played, what their schedule looks like, strength of schedule, FPI, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Second thing I think about is the respect factor for the program. Now, when you've won a national championship and you've been in the CFP multiple times over the last 4 years, three times over the last 4 years, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you're going to get that benefit of the doubt.
True.
It's just part of it. But if you look at their schedule, they don't play and they haven't played anybody. Like, this isn't Deshaun Watson and Clemson. This is a different team, right?
Right.
They've played Kent State, Auburn, it turned out to be a dog, Louisville, Boston College, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Syracuse. This doesn't sound right.
You're right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, let's start with their non-conference real quick. Furman and Georgia Southern, that sounds worse than the Oregon and Washington State non-conference games.
Yeah, it's awful. Right? So that was, I messed up. Let me start over. But yeah, you're on the roll there. You're on the right track.
Okay.
So Furman, Texas A&M, Georgia Southern.
Which Texas A&M ended up being a good game for them they're a good team.
They're a good team, but they won by two.
True.
Right? Georgia Southern, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Wake Forest, NC State, who's ranked highly right now, so decent win over NC State. Florida State, who was ranked in the top five to start the season, just absolutely terrible all year. Louisville, Boston College, Duke, South Carolina, Pitt. That doesn't stack up to any of the top 10 team schedules. If you look at LSU's schedule, LSU's schedule is absolutely nasty. I have half a mind to think LSU beats Clemson if you put them on a neutral site.
Really?
LSU have played, I saw this tweet or Instagram or something, they played number 1, number 5, number 8, number 10, number 12, and number 14 or something like that.
Wow.
Like, nasty. Yeah, they have three losses, but their losses are to legitimate teams. I'm actually really upset about this. And I don't want to.
You're going into hate mode.
Well, I am, but but we're going to talk about this later. So I'm going to save that comment. All I'm saying is I feel like Clemson is overrated. I feel like the benefit of the doubt that they've gotten for being as successful as they've been the previous years is overriding what they've done this season.
Okay.
Now, on the flip side of that, if I was Clemson, and let's say USC has won a national championship in the last couple of years and we were undefeated, I would say, what could you possibly ding on my resume? We haven't lost. And also, if you're in a Power Five and you haven't lost a game, you deserve to get in that top four. I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying I think people are overrating Clemson a little bit too much. That was a gigantic rant that ended up in nowhere, so I'm going to turn it back to you.
Okay, fair. Let's wrap up this first part about the Pac-12 championship game and all we have to do to finish that.
Seriously.
So, yes, little dumper for the entire Pac-12 championship game. Although it was not a very good game to watch, my prediction, my bold prediction, is still attainable. Washington winning back-to-back years. So, step number one, check. Now we just have to go through 365 days to see if my prediction is right next year.
So let's throw another prediction on top of that.
Okay.
Do you think the Pac-12 gets a team into the CFP next season?
So that would mean that I am saying Washington will make the CFP, because if I'm predicting them to win.
I guess so, yeah.
You know what? I just looked. They have a pretty easy schedule in that all of their tough games are at home. They play Utah, Oregon, USC, and the Apple Cup all at Husky Stadium next year. So
that's true.
I think their schedule is, and if we've learned anything this year from our first full year worth of podcasting, scheduling home and away games play a huge role.
Absolutely.
UCLA, we knew had a tough schedule. Oregon, we knew had an easy schedule as far as non-conference and all the home games. So I think that will play a big part next year. And so, yeah, I'll say that.
Okay.
UW wins again, the Pac-12, and they make it into the college football playoff.
Woo! You heard it here, folks.
Wow. I don't feel good about it, but I said it.
That's a hot take. Hot take.
But just released the conference awards. So, offensive player of the year, can almost guarantee that you know who this is.
Gardner Minshew.
Yes, Gardner Minshew, Washington State. The Pat Tillman defensive player of the year, Ben Burr-Kirvin from Washington, that middle linebacker who just flew all over the place. Freshman offensive player of the year, Jamar Jefferson, Oregon State, running back who was on pace at the beginning of the year to just destroy any of the Oregon State records and was in the top five for a while. Then he kind of got hurt, so dropped out. But freshman defensive player of the year, Merlin Robertson from Arizona State. Merlin Olson, we made that joke earlier in the year, well-deserved. And coach of the year, none other, Mike Leach, Washington State. We nailed that one on the head. Any thoughts on that before we get into the all-conference awards? First and second team?
No, I mean, that makes those all make perfect sense. And I think we talked about those last week for a reason. And Jefferson, you're right about that. I mean, he was 230, 220. Yeah. And he was putting up numbers that were nuts. And one of the reasons why I think I had them higher than last in my power rankings.
You had them above Colorado.
I had them above Colorado was that, man, they could just put up yards. And it was one of those things where that was really only their strength. That was their only strength.
Yeah.
But it was impressive.
Yeah, like even against Ohio State, they rushed for like 350 yards as a team or something crazy like that. So, yeah. So that'll be something good for them to build on for next year. That's a huge award for him, obviously, and Oregon State has at least that to fall back on and build off of. But I'm going to run through these real quick, and I'm just going to kind of do the big names. So first team, offense, Gardner Minshew at quarterback, Eno Benjamin and J.J. Taylor. So Eno Benjamin from Arizona State, J.J. Taylor from Arizona were the two running backs selected, and N'Keal Harry and Laviska Shenault, two wide receivers who we've talked a lot about. Tight end, and I know we've mentioned him before, Caleb Wilson from UCLA, redshirt junior, led the country in receiving yards for a tight end. So that'll be a nice piece of the puzzle for Chip Kelly to build off of next year. I'm not sure anyone wants to hear too much about the O linemen, but Utah and Washington dominated the awards, and rightfully so. Second team, here's where things get a little interesting. Second team quarterback, who would you guess of the remaining? So Gardner Minshew won. Who do you think is second?
I mean, it's either got to be Justin Herbert or what's his face from Washington? Jake Browning.
KJ Costello from Stanford.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that's a huge honor for him, to be honest, because one, they didn't have a great year. So that means they had to pick over a couple other guys that had similar years. But also because, like we've talked about all year, he was not the main guy in that offense going into the season. It was Bryce Love, Bryce Love, Bryce Love, run game, run game, run game.
But this year it was him.
It was all him. So I think that's well-deserved. KJ Costello, second team QB. And then running backs, Myles Gaskin and Zach Moss. And wide receivers, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Dylan Mitchell from Oregon. I think those are all very well deserving. Those guys have been in our Big Boy Pants Awards throughout the entire year. They have good numbers. They're on the top half of the teams in the conference for the most part. And then defensively, not sure how much you want to get into this, but Utah and Washington really owned first team. Utah had three guys. Washington had four, two DBs and the two linebackers. Or one D-line and one linebacker for them. So, and Utah had two D-linemen and a safety. So, mostly them. But USC did have a lot of recognition on second-team defense. Porter Gustin, Jay Tufele, both defensive linemen, Cameron Smith, linebacker, and Iman Marshall, corner. So, they had some good representation on the second team.
Iman Marshall, well, at least Iman Marshall, Cameron Smith and Porter Gustin should have been first team Pac-12 guys if they perform the way they're supposed to perform and stayed healthy.
Yeah, if they would have stayed healthy for sure, but they both had to sit. Well, Porter Gustin missed, what, the second half of the year, basically, or the last third. And Cameron Smith missed a couple games here and there with that hamstring and foot. So, yeah, totally agree. And was Iman Marshall hurt? Or did he sit out a game? I don't remember.
I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, I do because Elijah Griffin got more playing time in the middle of the season than he was supposed to because of that. So
that's right. So yeah. And then as far as the specialists go, kind of funny to see first team punter, place kicker, and return specialists all from Utah, which apparently Utah is just known for their special teams. That is. So the punter, Mitch Wisnowski, he's a senior. This is his third first team all conference as a punter.
Wow.
3 out of 4 years he won first team for punting, which is crazy.
So people are like, oh, yeah, whatever, special teams. But look at the Rams in the NFL. Like having a kicker like Greg Zuerlein and having a punter like Johnny Hecker, and special teams, they flip the field all the time.
Yeah, I mean, special teams is basically about winning field position. It's the field position battle, right? Like if you have a good punter that can pin people deep, your defense is a lot better off because now an offense has to go 80 plus yards to score, which is a lot harder to do than if you have to go 50 or 60, you know? So yeah, I totally agree. Flipping the field.
If you're on your own 20 and you go 3 and out, Johnny Hecker can kick that ball 65 yards and put it at their own 20. Whereas most kickers are punting it to midfield.
Right.
And yeah, they have a short field. And then, you know, if you can kick a 52, 54 yard field goal and feel confident about it, that's a whole nother type of football game.
Yeah. So, and it, agreed.
That was one of those things about USC this year too, is they lost their kicker very early on and they had to rely on a backup. And then, you get to the 30-yard line and you think differently about your offense when you have a backup versus your guy that you really trust. So
agreed.
That's important.
I totally agree. So those are the awards. Kind of a quick breakdown. Any thoughts? Anything in particular that stood out or doesn't stand out or who you thought maybe should have been included?
I'm actually surprised that Cam Smith and Porter Gustin and Amon Marshall got second team all honors, being that USC's defense was not impressive this year at all. Mm-hmm. Porter Gustin, like you said, missed the second half of the season. Cam Smith sat out kind of on and off the second half, and they gave up points.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, like that, the defense was supposed to be the strength of that team, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, when they won games, they won offensively, and that's not the way that the USC team is supposed to go. So I think based on their preseason expectations and how that those people think they're going to play at the next level, they got a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and they got those awards. So good for them.
Agreed. And I think a very important thing to bring up is that despite missing the last four or five games, however many he didn't play, Porter Gustin still ended up third in the conference in sacks.
Wow.
He had seven on the year and the leader had eight. And then there's a guy above him that Bradley Anae from Utah had eight. And then Mustafa Johnson from Colorado had 7.5. So despite not playing most of conference, he almost led the conference in sacks, which is pretty impressive.
He is a quarterback killer. He is a pass rushing beast.
Yep.
When he's in the game, he even looks like it's got long hair. It's all ripped up. Like
he's a scary guy.
His name's Porter. Like he's just a man. I wish we could have him back one more year. Such a bummer.
It is a bummer. But yeah, and just to get back to the defensive player of the year, I want to read his stats because they're absolutely insane. Ben Burkervin finished the year with 165 tackles.
Whoa.
Yeah. He averaged almost 13 tackles a game. That's unheard of.
That is nuts.
That is an absurd amount of tackling. He's all over the field. So when you see numbers like that, it's kind of crazy. But as far as some of the other, the one guy that I thought kind of got left out, he did get honorable mention, but running back Josh Kelly from UCLA really came onto the scene late. And I know it's hard to give a guy first or second team honors when you're the one of the worst teams in the conference, but the guy finished fourth in rushing in the conference and rushed for over 1,200 yards. So like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's not how the cookie crumbles. Anyways, those are your Pac-12 honors. Let's get into, so we had seven teams make the bowl season and some good games. I think there's going to be some good matchups. From the South, there was only Arizona State and Utah. So on December 15th, Arizona State plays Fresno State in the Las Vegas Bowl. And then Cal plays TCU in the Cheez-It Bowl. We're getting into the bowl games that like nobody actually knows the names of because we didn't have a particularly good year. So this will be fun. You know what we should do? I'm going to say the real team that they play, and then I'm either going to say the real name of the bowl game or the made up name, and you have to guess which is real and which is fake.
I love it.
All right.
First of all, I think that we should do this every year because the bowl games change so much with sponsorship like shifting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I have a list in front of me, but by no means have I memorized them. Okay. So right. I won't look at it and let's do this. This is great.
Okay. All right, good. So the Las Vegas Bowl I already gave to you. Cal versus TCU in the Cheez-It Bowl.
That's a real or fake?
Yeah, real or fake.
Real.
Yeah, I just said that. I want to give you a free one because you usually struggle in these games.
I was like, is that your question?
This one's too easy because it's a big one. Iowa State and Washington State in the Alamo Bowl. Come on, that one's easy.
Yeah, that's real.
Here we go. These will be fun.
I know what the traditional Pac-12 bowl games are. You're not going to get me on those couple.
Well, damn it. These ones are all, one of them's regular. These are all basically, the rest. Stanford versus Pitt in the Sun Bowl.
Yep.
Northwestern Utah in the Holiday Bowl.
Holiday Bowl's a big one.
Washington, Ohio State in the Rose Bowl.
Isn't it the Tulip Bowl?
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on, Tony.
Wait, I have one more. Michigan State versus Oregon, which is going to be a great game, in the Red Box Bowl.
That's real.
But yeah, that one I might have got you on, but I kind of dug myself a little too deep with giving the first two away. That's okay. Anyways.
Hold on. I like this game. Let me throw like five at you because I have the list in front of me.
Let me get this noise machine.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So let's do UAB versus Northern Illinois in the Swamp Bowl.
No, that's made up.
Damn it. I'm bad at this. It's the Boca Raton Bowl.
Okay.
In Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh, nice. I heard it's beautiful down there.
Yeah.
Good time of year to go.
Gosh, some of these are like staples. Buffalo versus Troy in the Dollar General Bowl.
I mean, I'm going to say real because I think that's a commercial with the guy with the mustache and the beard.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Gosh, dang it. Boston College versus Boise State in the First Responder Bowl.
I'm going to say fake. That's too broad.
It's real.
What? No.
It's in Dallas.
Read them off. Read off some of the fun ones.
Okay. So you said Cheez-It, the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit.
Quick Lane? Is that a bowling alley? They go.
You got me. the Galsparia Bowl in Tampa, Florida. Galsparia.
Okay.
The Camp Camellia Bowl in Alabama. The Cure Bowl in Florida.
Cure, like cured meat?
Like, yeah, C-U-R-E, Cure.
That's interesting.
The Belk Bowl in North Carolina.
That's made up. That's not a real game. Who's playing in that? There's no way they actually play a game in the Belk Bowl.
South Carolina versus Virginia.
Wow, those are actually pretty big name schools playing in the Belk Bowl.
The Belk Bowl.
Interesting.
The Camping World Bowl, which has actually been going on for the last couple years. Mm. The Pinstripe Bowl, which is in Yankee Stadium, which is actually kind of cool. Yeah. The Independence Bowl. Those are all the funny ones that a lot of them are ridiculous, but we know them as already. Like the, what was the Bell Helicopters Bowl was for a while, but they got rid of that one.
The Dallas Heart of Zaxby's Bowl. Isn't that one?
And no, not anymore.
That's not one anymore?
No, they changed the
First Responder Bowl.
Yeah, it's the First Responder Bowl now.
Oh man, that's great.
So needless to say, there are too many flippant bowl games.
Yeah, no, I agree. Totally agree.
We have a billion 6-6 teams playing each other. It's like, come on.
Oh, great. That's why they need to, and this is not to get into the discussion right now, but cut down the season, longer playoff, make the games matter more. This game doesn't matter for most of these schools other than getting some money.
It's all a money grab.
Anywho, do you have the list of the New Year's Six bowls in front of you? We can kind of break that down and then do this. Oh, well, let's do the CFP first. So,
do the CFP first. Yeah.
So CFP, the breakdown, the Final Four. We had, for the first time ever, three undefeated teams make the Final Four, which is unheard of so far in its young infancy. Do you say young and infancy or just infancy?
Just infancy.
Yeah, because that's like that's a double whammy. Young infancy would mean like really, really young infant, which is basically the definition of an infant.
Yeah, and if it's like just born.
Right, so it can't be younger.
it's implied.
Okay, fair. So number one overall, Alabama. Two, Clemson. Three, Notre Dame. Four, Oklahoma. So Alabama will play Oklahoma. Clemson will play Notre Dame. Thoughts? Reactions? Are you surprised? Let down?
So I watched a lot of the pre-release coverage of the college football playoff selection Sunday because it was on at like 9 a.m., which is great.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to wait too long. I guess let's throw a wrench in this conversation. I have a question. Okay. How come in the regular season they take until Tuesday afternoon to release the CFP rankings, but the second that the biggest weekend of the year happens in the conference championships, they can make a decision before the next morning?
I don't know.
Riddle me that, Batman.
I'm not sure. I feel like maybe because they know they have to get it out.
I think it's because here's why. I just figured it out.
Oh.
Right. It all came together.
That was quick. Right? You didn't even need my help. I'm just more of a sounding board for you at this point.
Just listen. Okay. So we have the games all day Saturday. Right. Oh, college football is so great. You wake up the next morning, NFL owns Sunday.
Good point.
They own it. All day Sunday is NFL. Monday afternoon, primetime, 5 p.m., Monday Night Football, ESPN.
Good point. You're on to something.
And then Tuesday after work, when nothing is on, when the NFL does not own the spotlight, they can have that 1 hour slot when people get back from work. It is a ratings grab.
That's a good point.
150%.
That's a good point. Unless on Tuesday nights you like to watch the Nuggets play the Magic in the NBA. The 17th game of the long, treacherous NBA season.
It's always a tough decision for me, but I usually go with the CFP.
Yeah, same. No, I agree. I have it on last because I love the Nuggets. Actually, I don't love the Nuggets. I love the Celtics. But to continue the joke, I love the Nuggets, so I keep it on last just in case so I can flip back during commercials to see what the score of that NBA game is.
Carmelo Anthony versus Dwight Howard is always fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, that's right. 2005, 2006.
That's the last time I watched the Magic play the Nuggets. Okay, so I watched a ton of the pregame. Whether it was hype or not, they built up the Oklahoma versus Ohio State versus Georgia conversation.
They did.
Like, ridiculously, right? Like
I think too much.
Exponentially.
Yeah, too much, if you ask me.
And a lot of the experts really wanted Georgia in that spot. They were saying, you know what? I understand what's probably going to happen. I understand who deserves it and what should happen, but I personally think that Georgia is the fourth best team in the country. And to be honest with you, I don't disagree with them. I think Oklahoma and Georgia deserve to be there. And I think probably Notre Dame should be booted. We watched them play USC in person.
We did.
And they were not impressive. A USC team that lost to Cal, that lost to Arizona State, that lost to UCLA, pushed Notre Dame to the brink. They haven't played anybody all year. The only claim to fame, and to be honest with you, you know, being undefeated is hard to argue against. It really is.
Yeah.
Their win against Michigan in week one is everything to their season.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I mean, but to be fair, at the time they played these teams, they beat three top 25 teams. At the time, Michigan was ranked 14th. At the time, Stanford was ranked 7th. At the time, Virginia Tech was ranked 24th. Oh, four actually. And at the time, Syracuse was ranked 12th. Now, there are some good wins on that schedule. Syracuse is still a good win. Northwestern is a good win. Pitt ended up playing in the conference championship. That's about it. Michigan, obviously. But yeah, that's about it. I think Clemson's going to roll Stanford to support your point. But I think that they're...
You mean Notre Dame. They're going to roll Notre Dame.
I'm sorry. Well, Clemson would definitely roll Stanford, no doubt. definitely roll Stanford. But
Bryce Love would carry the ball 20 times for like 17 yards.
Yeah. I think Clemson is going to roll Notre Dame. I think it's going to be – my guess is going to be a 17 to 21 point win for Clemson.
So I agree with you totally. I actually think that Notre Dame's schedule is better than Clemson's schedule. Clemson's schedule is –
fair.
Nonsense.
But, yeah.
It's a bummer to me that Oklahoma has to sit there at four because of that one loss, because the Oklahoma-Alabama game is by far the most game I'm excited to watch.
Agreed.
Kyler Murray, Tua, Oklahoma's electric offense versus Alabama, the juggernaut that they are. I think that matchup just screams prime time, amazing college football. And I wish it was the national championship game. And then the other half of that is I have no interest in watching, although I will watch it because I'm a college football fan, Alabama and Clemson play in another freaking national championship game. I just don't want to see it. I'm sick of it.
I know. But this would be four in a row? Well, no, because last year they played in the first round.
Did they?
So it was, yeah, because remember Alabama was the fourth seed after they lost the SEC championship game to Georgia. So last year Clemson played Alabama in the first round, and then Clemson – and then Alabama beat Georgia in the final.
Yeah, that Alabama-Georgia game was...
That was pretty epic.
Amazing.
That was pretty epic. But I agree. I think that the storylines surrounding Oklahoma and Alabama are a lot more interesting as well. Notre Dame's kind of meh. They got a little meh element to them. Brian Kelly, I guess Ian Book, their quarterback's kind of a cool story because he took over.
No, his last name is Book. It's not a cool story.
Clemson, though... Trevor Lawrence, freshman stud. That's a good story. Defensive line, 3 out of 4, probably going first round draft.
Yeah, that's a good story. I just, the committee did the right thing. I want to put that out there. They made the right decision. Oklahoma deserves to be there. Their offense is absolutely incredible. They avenged their only loss of the season to Texas, which was a close loss in the regular season. We watched that game. And then this game was amazing, and they came back, and then they punched it in at the end when they had to. So they deserve to be there for sure. Mm-hmm. Story around Georgia and Ohio State is, and UCF even, 12-0, right? It's like, they said it during the selection show, that there's not really a ton of conversation around expanding the playoff.
And I don't get it. Yeah, I don't get it either.
Like what? So pros and cons, right? And you could do a whole podcast about this, but there's obviously cons. These kids are students. They still have to go to school. They have girlfriends. They have accidental pregnancies. They got a whole bunch of stuff going on. But
you're all about the accidental pregnancy.
I mean, hey,
it happens. I'm just saying, that's one of the things you always go to instead of like homesick, school's too hard.
No, those are way less important than accidental babies. But if they can figure out the sponsorship piece, the money piece, right? Because that's what it's about. It's not about the freaking kids. You think these people care about the kids? They don't. They care about the sponsors, the bowl games, who's going to get paid, when the games happen, how the logistics works as far as who gets what. As soon as they figure that out, if the money is there, it's going to happen. Because that's, at the end of the day, the bottom line is
money.
The only thing that matters to the people making the decisions.
I agree. And I know we've said this before. I think conference championships have to matter. I think those should be automatic bids. And then if you have one at large or three at large, however you want to do it, 6 or 8 teams, I think that's the best format to get more games in. And I think you even out the playing field too by 2 non-conference games, 8 conference games. So everybody's playing the same amount of conference games. That's always a point of contention for the Pac-12 because we play 9. So when Alabama's playing the Citadel, USC is going up against Washington State, right? Like it just isn't a fair matchup as far as scheduling goes. So if they could go either, 2 non-conference, 8 conference games, or if it works out, 3 non-conference, 8 conference games, whatever it is, but everybody has the same amount. And then you have a 3 or 4 game playoff if you make it all the way.
So I think the only way you can do the automatic bids is if you do 8 teams. Yeah. I don't think you can do that with 6 because let's take this year, for example. You take the Power 5 conference champs and 1 at-large. Mm-hmm. That means that Georgia does not get in still, right?
Yeah, but they could be the at-large. So Alabama, Clemson.
But you can't take Notre Dame. You can't not that, take Notre Dame. Is that at-large?
But isn't that much more of a debate now?
If that was a debate, that would have been a debate this year. But it's not. It's 3 and 5. Right? They obviously think Notre Dame is better than Georgia. Otherwise, they would not have given them the 3.
But win your conference. That's my answer.
They're not in a conference.
Okay, Notre Dame is a specific instance. But I think that's what I'm saying. Well, right. But I think in that instance, you would have Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Washington in no matter what. And then you debate for that 6th spot. Is a 2-loss Georgia better than an undefeated Notre Dame?
Obviously, the committee does not think so because they gave them the 3 spot. So then in this same situation, Georgia does not get in.
Good. They didn't win their conference. And they're not the next best team.
Georgia does not get in. And then...
You're like Oprah. You get into the college football playoff. You get into the college football playoff.
If you do 8, the automatic bid makes sense because then you have Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State,
and Washington.
Washington, who does not deserve to be in, but whatever. And then you have the 3 at large would be Georgia, Notre Dame.
But you still have a debate. Then it's either
the debate of our Michigan or UCF.
No, or Florida or LSU. Is a 3-loss LSU, who you just said had the hardest schedule in the country, better than a 2-loss Michigan?
Well, they just ranked them, so they helped us with that. They say no. They say Michigan is 7, UCF is 8. So in this situation, they put Michigan in. UCF undefeated still does not get in to this hypothetical 8-team playoff.
Which is such a bummer. I would love to see them get in.
I would love to. I would love to see UCF get play Alabama and get assaulted for 60 minutes. Because they would get, I mean, those are three-star recruits versus five-star recruits, man. I'm telling you, it's not going to end well. It just
They beat Auburn last year.
They beat
Auburn last year, who was much better last year than they were this year. And they get a chance to play LSU, who you are claiming has one of the toughest schedules in the whole country.
They do. That's true.
So they get a chance. They get a chance to show, and maybe they'll prove everybody wrong again. But they also have their backup quarterback, which is a caveat.
That's true. They have a New Year's Six Bowl this year, so good for them.
Yeah, Fiesta Bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So let's go through those real quick, and then we'll move on.
Oh, yeah.
Sugar Bowl, Texas versus Georgia. Super excited to watch that. Texas is fun to watch. Georgia's amazing.
Yeah.
Fiesta Bowl, UCF versus LSU. Big time chance for UCF to really prove they're part of the big boys. Mm-hmm. I think LSU is the real freaking deal. They have their schedule is absolutely a gauntlet. So if UCF can go to Arizona, which is really far for both of them.
Yeah.
And win that football game, that says a lot.
It says a lot. Yep.
Rose Bowl, Ohio State versus Washington. We figured that would happen. Could care less about that game as much as that sucks, because neither one of the teams are really fun to watch. Peach Bowl, Michigan versus Florida.
Ooh, that'll be good too.
That'd be right. I haven't really watched any Florida games.
Hey, those are big name teams, though. That kind of makes it fun. Huge programs. I don't know. Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Anyways. Washington, Ohio State, what are your thoughts preliminarily before? I mean, we have like literally 4 weeks until they play, so a lot of time to talk about it. But
I mean, I think Ohio State's better. I think that they've, you know, really picked it up the last 2 or 3 weeks. And Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
Dwayne Haskins.
Yep.
Dwayne Haskins is a stud. And I think that in Pasadena, Washington has, you know, a little bit of an advantage, but Ohio State's probably the better football team. Do they, you know, based on, you know, the breaking news we're going to release here in a little bit of Urban Meyer
you know,
retiring soon, does that help or hurt Ohio State? Not sure.
Yeah, agreed. And that will really come down to, can Jake Browning and the offense do anything? Which
I know
he couldn't do anything against Utah's defense, so I'm not sure, but they'll have a couple of weeks to kind of figure everything out. So we will see. But like you said, breaking news, Urban Meyer is retiring after the Rose Bowl, no longer going to coach. That's good. Crap. That's what you get. That's what you get for housing a domestic abuser and trying to hide it. Get out of here.
I wonder where that comes from.
I think there's a lot of pressure on him, and I'm sure he doesn't want to deal with it anymore. And I don't blame him. Get out. Because there's people that are too angry at you, and I think that he shouldn't be allowed to go unpunished. Because I think what happened was a lot of people around him got punished, and he kind of got let off a little easy.
So I guess the question is: A, what was the motivation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why did he do this so abruptly? It seems like it comes very conveniently after a lot of the scandal that he was going through. And then B, the question everybody's asking is: what does he do next? He's a coach again, because he's only 54. That's really, really young for some of these big time prestigious college football coaches, NFL coaches, all coaches, right?
Right. I don't know. I don't have the answer to either of those. I do think it's a little bit interesting that it happened, you know, the same season that all of the scandal happened. And as far as what he does next, I can't imagine that he coaches again, because he already took like 2 years off. Remember, he was a commentator for a little while because he said he was so stressed and his health was bad and his family asked him to do other stuff. So I can't imagine that he comes back again after this, because I would assume his family wants him to stay out of the limelight for a little while.
The only thing that I have to say about that is he takes 2 years off. When the NFL comes calling and says, hey, how's your golf game?
Right.
And we'll pay you $10 million a year for 3 years to coach the Browns or the Lions or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a tough decision at that point. That's it.
But that's a good point. Maybe his next step is the NFL at some point, because there's no recruiting. There's no needing to be eligible. There's no, you know, there's none of that. A lot of the like moral things that happen with college athletes, he doesn't have to do anymore. Which seems to be troublesome for him.
So so if he can be a dirt ball, he can continue.
Yeah, exactly. anyways. Okay, so yeah, Urban Meyer is going to retire. Other huge news, USC just hired Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator. Good thing or great thing?
Great thing. so stinking excited. I can't even tell you the amount of things that have me excited for next season. My season tickets get better.
Yep.
So on a personal note. Yeah. And I've always said, you know, when all of this coaching stuff was going down, USC needs a quarterback guy, an offensive guy, a progressive, you know, use the talent that you have to create tons of points type of guy. Those are the guys that tend to be successful in college football these days. This isn't 1978. You don't line up in the I formation and, you know, throw bubble screens and hope it works out. That's just,
right.
That's just not the way it works.
Right. No, I agree. I think it's going to be great. I think he has an incredible young quarterback to work with, which is great, in JT Daniels. I think he has a very good receiving core coming back. Young guys, Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I affectionately call Top Ramen Amon-Ra, which I think is a great nickname for him. But then you also have Tyler Vaughns and Michael Pittman Jr. coming back, who are going to be seasoned, have played two full seasons under their belt. And then you combine that with the offensive genius that is Cliff Kingsbury, and you start slinging that thing around 50, 55 times a game. Woo! Come on, bring a little firepower back to LA, right? You got a stiffy for Cliffy, don't you?
Oh man, do I ever. I can't wait. I think it's the exact thing that USC needs. I also think that if Clay Helton doesn't work out, you have the next guy in line to take over the program. I don't want to think that far. I hope that never happens. But I just think I'm just excited. I think it's going to be awesome.
Isn't this kind of best case scenario? People like Clay Helton because of the way he approaches people and how personable he is and how nice he is and how involved he is with the students and the community and all that sort of stuff. But then he can still be that. And then you just let Kingsbury do his thing on the offensive end. That's kind of best case scenario.
Yeah. And like you said, with all the offensive weapons that they have coming back, he should be the guy to know how to utilize them best to be able to maximize this offense, which is exactly what this program needs.
Agreed. 100% agreed. Well, good. I'm glad we're both on the same page there. Last bit of news, the Heisman finalists were revealed just a short while ago, actually. The three, I don't think it's really any surprise. Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray, and Dwayne Haskins, correct?
Correct.
So I don't think there's really too much debate, only because Alabama is the best team in the country, and he has been Tagovailoa has been the greatest player on their team for the most part. He hasn't played a whole lot of fourth quarters this season. His stats are still pretty good, so that is impressive. I can't imagine it going any other way, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Tua Kyler Murray 1-2 battle. I think most of the year, people have been thinking that Tua was the guy and Kyler Murray was just the next best player in college football. But the way that the second half of the season has gone, with Tua sitting out a lot of fourth quarters, not playing as much because Alabama's kind of blowing people out, injuries a little bit here and there, and then Kyler Murray kind of really bringing it on with the West Virginia game and the Texas game.
Right.
I think that people have started to see how much he is deserving. So it's actually going to be a pretty close race. It would be the first time in the history of college football that one program has two different players win back to back.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Well, who do you think it's going to be? I'm saying Tua.
I'm going Kyler.
Oh. Oh, well. Okay. Decision making has never been your strong point. So yeah, I can see how you would do that. But
touche.
Anyways, good. So huge news, Urban Meyer retiring, Cliff Kingsbury to USC, and the Heisman candidates revealed, or finalists revealed. Let's get into the Blitz Package, a segment where anything goes. Anything can be asked here. Go ahead, you start. What's your Blitz Package question?
This isn't really a question. I just wanted to force you to do something, and then we could talk about it.
Okay.
So I want you to open your phone.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me what the top four emojis are on your recents.
Oh, like I have to open a list.
Yeah. Like you're starting a brand new text. Go to your emojis. What's 1 through 4? Those are the ones that you use the most.
Okay.
It says a lot about a person.
I have a heart.
Okay. That's for me, of course.
Continue. Yeah, of course. Setting up the podcast takes a lot of love. So hence why we're here. So I have the heart, the laughing emoji with the tears coming out. This, the sounds good or okay,
Got it.
And then after that, I have sent a lot of birthday ones because I have a present.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Yeah, which is true because like there's a lot of people, especially in your family, with birthdays in November. Your mom, your dad, your sister, my brother. True. There's a lot going on in November, so we just kind of got done with that. So those are the four.
I was hoping for something a little juicier.
Sorry, not that's all I got.
But that's good. The present one is very is unique, right? Mm-hmm. I think the laughing, crying one is probably a very common one. My number one is the thumbs up.
Okay.
I use the thumbs up in the same way that you use the
okay.
The okay symbol.
Yeah.
So, the laughing, crying face, because that's just the best way to show how funny things are.
Yeah, agreed.
Even if you're exaggerating a little bit. I actually have the reddish orange bleepity bleep.
Oh,
super pissed off one.
The cussing one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mostly because of the USC's second half of the football season, probably.
Especially because Shakiest Gun in the West was really digging it in that you lost to UCLA.
So I've thrown that in there.
Yeah.
Probably a couple dozen times. And then the super ridiculous, like I look a little crazy, silly face where it's like sideways and the eyes are all jacked up. Basically saying like, I know I'm saying a bunch of dumb crap, but.
Right. You do use that a lot. Yeah, you do use that a lot.
So anyway, not really a question, but I just wanted to see where your head was at. And you're obviously loving and giving and funny all at the same time.
Well, at least I try to be. That's the goal. So I do it through emojis because I can't actually do it in person. Isn't that what we've come to these days? As long as you can send it in a text message, it's all that matters.
Pretty much.
So I got one for you. It's not a question. Well, it's kind of a question, but I think we should spend a little airtime on it. You're going to be a dad for the third time over in what? 4 days? 5 days? Monday, December 10th. You will be a dad for the third time. That's not me. I'm not a psychic. I'm not Chip Coffee or anything. I'm just saying, you know that you're having a scheduled delivery on that day. So you will have your third son. How do you feel? How does it compare? Not as far as better or worse, but just how you feel compared to the first two.
Yeah, 6 days away. So early morning next Monday. It feels, I guess, similar to the last one, and that we already had a kid going into the C-section. So it's not like we don't know what we're getting ourselves into. I'm not necessarily nervous about the baby part. I've done it, you know, this will be the third time. But it's, you always worry about making sure everything goes right. You just never know with all that stuff. You just want to make sure everything goes the way it's supposed to go. And then, you know, coming back home with a little tiny infant and then two crazy.
A very young infant.
Yeah. And then an 18-month-old and a 3-year-old who are already, you know, they're noisy and they throw stuff and all that. It's going to be a challenge, but I mean, Steph and I are ready to rock. We have everything ready to go. So we're just going to put our heads down and look up, and all of a sudden he'll be 4 months old and we'll actually be able to sleep.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I feel like it's a fun time right around Christmas, right? You kind of get to a lot of the holiday stuff, get to tote them around, show them off. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's a good time for work too, because I get to, you know, my other job anyway.
Well, yeah. The one that you do for fun. This one we get paid for. The contracts are pretty ridiculous here for the Pac-12 checkdown.
Yeah, the other one, that's my hobby. I get to stay home for a little bit. So it's good.
So yeah, you'll take a couple weeks off. You'll get to just kind of hang, right? So that'll be nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, good. What are you most nervous about? Like, or what's the worst part that comes with a newborn? The down home truth. Is that the right saying? The downright truth. Anyways, just hit us straight. What is the worst part about the newest one coming, or just a young baby after you bring it home?
Well, there were surprising things with my first that caught me off guard. But since those aren't surprising to me anymore, those aren't bad. Like, I'm already changing diapers, so changing diapers is fine. I could care less about it. I do it all the time. Sleep, like I don't sleep that much anyway with two young kids, so I'm not really worried about that. The thing I don't like the most is how fragile like 0 to 3 month babies are.
Got it.
Like, I'm a big guy, and young newborns are just so, they have to hold their neck and they get the smallest fever. It's an issue. And there's just, you can't treat them like your other boys where it's like, it's fine. Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah.
I'll cry it out. Like, some big deal. Like, everything is a big deal. And I hate that part. I just want to get through the part where they can actually like kind of deal with stuff themselves. They can hold their own neck up. And, you know, that's the worst part for me is this, the fragile beginning where you just like, everything could be a problem.
Yeah. Fair. Good to know. Good to know. What's the best part?
The best part is the first part that they can start to recognize you and smile when they see your face.
That's a good point.
Because as a dad, since I didn't hold them for 9 months, I don't have that physical connection.
Right.
The biological connection like moms do. But the second that they can start to differentiate you from regular people, from non-parents, that's when it becomes like pretty special.
Good point. Great point. Well, good. Well, we're excited as hell from you. We've got a lot of good fan feedback. Dad bod three times over.
Oh man, it's only getting worse. Shoot.
Oh, it's going to be fun though. So that 6 days away. So most likely there won't be a podcast next week, just for everyone out there. We'll be taking the week off and then we'll kind of see after that. We'll see what happens. Definitely a Tipsy Christmas podcast in the works at some point over the break. We don't know when or how, but we will make that happen. And it will be hopefully equally as entertaining as it was last year. But yeah, good stuff. This is a great time. Great time. We did a good job. I'm happy with the way this one turned out. I can say that firmly.
Me too.
Good. Oh, good. All right, Kyle. We'll do the same damn thing next week.
You got it, my friend.
All right. See ya.